All right, it's a pleasure to welcome back Rabbi Dr. Zev Elef, who gave a series in the summer, and please God, we'll actually be giving a series in a couple of weeks that you'll soon see advertised. He is the president of Goretz College and really writes a tremendous amount on American Jewish history and all kinds of fascinating articles within the documentary record of modern Orthodoxy, and many books and many articles, and it's really a pleasure to welcome him back to Torah Motion, always talking about interesting things going on in the world at large. And I think the issue of Chabad and the menorahs in public square is a fascinating topic, so we'll let Dr. Zev get started. Vakasha, talking from Philadelphia, we move across the Atlantic from London to Philly. Vakasha.
Thank you so much, Rabbi Kamen. It's always very dangerous to speak or write about something that's pretty close to the present. I'm sure Professor Shapiro agrees that it's easier to write about the dead. They don't argue back. The living, however, can be problematic. I'm going to share my screen. I prepared a PowerPoint for everybody. There's just so many great images and texts for me to share. Chabad menorahs in the American public square. And it's a good time to wish everybody a Hanukkah Sameach, Reuven Hanukkah. I want to, as I shrink my Zoom buttons, one of the protagonists, or if you're Chabad, maybe the antagonist, of this story, which really takes us in the age of Ronald Reagan in the 1980s and a change regime in the United States Supreme Court, is Mark Stern, who was the legal expert for the American Jewish Congress, who writes the following brief. It hardly needs saying, but on such a sensitive subject, in a little pamphlet he called The Year of the Menorah, published in 1987, that we welcome the public display by Christian Jews and others of their most deeply religious symbols. It's a free country, and there is no established church in the windows and on their lawns of their homes, in their private spaces, that is, and on the lawns of their churches and synagogues. Such displays evidence the robust religious pluralism. Who can't get on board with that? That is one of our most celebrated national characteristics. But governmental sponsorship of the very same deeply religious symbols, but for these menorahs or any religious symbol to be in a government or a public space conveys a critically different message vis-a-vis the establishment of religion by government, that is the First Amendment, when the symbolism is Christian, as it almost always will be given the demography of America, predominantly Christian country. The message conveyed is the establishment of Christianity. And so in order to make sure that Judaism doesn't exist in the United States in a so-called Christian country, Jews have to obey the same policies or the same political stance to make sure that their menorahs or any other religious artifacts are not on public spaces. That is the position of Mark Stern of the American Jewish Congress. Probably the chief obstacle to a more active communal response to the campaign to erect menorahs, a campaign that has certain severe political connotations on public land, is a strong and widespread desire to avoid highly publicized internecine court battles. Many, perhaps most, CRCs have quietly challenged Lubavitch's menorah campaign, that is the political group's civil rights councils. Such efforts, however, are almost inevitably fruitless because the Rebbe's, it's the Lubavitch Rebbe who was alive at the time, commands are not negotiable by local Lubavitch leaders. You can't negotiate with a Shaliach, with a Chabad rabbi. The Rebbe already said, you got to establish these gigantic menorahs. Even where the local leader is sensitive to communal concern, is amenable to placing the menorah on private land, he is almost certain to be overruled by Lubavitch headquarters, which obviously places great importance on the placement of menorahs on public land. Lubavitch made four arguments. We'll get into the history after this. That the menorah was not a religious symbol, that the Capitol grounds were a public forum and hence it had a free speech right to place its menorah there. That such placement would not establish religion, contra the First Amendment, and that banning the menorah but not Christian trees unconstitutional, sorry to move my Zoom control, favored one religion over another. So the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. There are two sides of the coin. America will not have an official religion and will not somehow subdue or prohibit the free exercise of any religion or abridging the freedom of speech and so on and so forth. But those are the two that I want to focus on, so-called free exercise and the establishment. There wasn't necessarily a consensus. In fact, legal historians will tell you that it's not until the 20th century in which the Establishment Clause was taken to the federal levels, mostly from the state level. There are two positions on the interaction between historically and philosophically of religion and state in the United States. First is a letter written by Thomas Jefferson to the Baptist Association in 1802, believing with you that religion is a matter which lies solely between man and God, that he owes account to none other for his faith or worship, and that the legitimate powers of government reach actions only and not opinions. I contemplate with sovereign reverence that act of the whole American people, which declared that their legislature should make no law respecting the establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, thus building a wall of eternal separation between church and state. He sees a very strong so-called wall separation between church and state, and that's where the term comes from. That's where it's derived. On the other hand, his usual ally, James Madison, who was the last of the founding fathers, writes in 1833, I must admit, moreover, that it may not be easy in every possible case, he's much more of a pragmatist, to trace the line of separation between the rights of religion and the civil authority, which with such distinctness as to avoid collisions and doubts on unessential points. Jefferson wants a strong divide between church and state, and Madison the pragmatist says, good luck, it's not always going to be so easy. Religion and civil law are slippery. So in 1974, Jay had indicated that I'm here zooming in from Philadelphia, and a number of rabbinical, Chabad rabbinical students light a large but not gigantic menorah right in the Mall of Philadelphia. And here, it's just, it gets a little caption, not even a full article in the Philadelphia Jewish Exponent. It's not until the next year that in San Francisco, in Union Square, that there is a gigantic menorah that is placed there. Now, if you ever wanted a lesson in how to be a polemicist, take Rabbi David Asher of the San Francisco Temple Emmanuel. He writes about this gigantic menorah in San Francisco. This is from the Shul Bulletin there. He writes, who would have thought Jews would now offer the newest challenge to the guarantees of the Bill of Rights? A giant menorah is now on display in Union Square to dwarf, or at least to equal, the Christmas tree. And each day, at the appropriate time for 8 days, it will be lit with the traditional blessings and the singing and dancing of Hanukkah, this is the polemical point, carols. This exercise is touted as a breakthrough by the Chabad House of Berkeley, a neo-Hasidic sect, the sponsors and promoters of it. It is a symbol, their announcement reads, to reflect the resurgence of pride in our cultural heritage that has made such an event possible. The San Francisco Jewish papers report rabbis split on Union Square display. I salute, writes one letter writer in a whole. It was not at all a consensus, but a fellow Max Cohen was visiting from New York. I salute the Chabad House of Berkeley and those stalwart Jewish laymen who sponsored this public display of the menorah. I hail their devotion, sincerity, and their pride in their capital F faith. Now, for many Jews, particularly in the political and legal space, the emergence of gigantic Chabad menorahs on the public square challenged their essentially 14th principle of faith, that America is different. America, the Jewish experience in the United States is exceptional by their estimation, much to do with the fact that there is that Jeffersonian separation of church and state. And so in 1960, Leo Pfeffer, who was on the, was one of the leading proponents of separation of church and state, I am replying to your letter of January 14th. It's already 1960 about some gigantic menorah, a larger menorah in a public space, not necessarily a giant one, but in a public space. In any event, the matter has been taken up with them, and we are assured that the incident will not be repeated. This is not about Chabad. This is about, a different case, in New York. The synagogue councils, this is a joint organization of Orthodox, Reform, and Conservative, they write in 1959, we oppose the erection of religious statues or the placing of religious symbols on publicly owned property. Public parks, city halls, government offices, building and similar premises are purchased and maintained out of the taxes imposed upon all persons. Continuing onward, we assume that in sponsoring the placing of the menorah at City Hall, this is New York, this is the 1959 case, either you were unaware of the factors referred to in this letter or that they were unwittingly overlooked. Now that they have been drawn to your attention, we are confident that you will take the necessary steps to see that the menorah is removed. Of course, there is no objection to having a menorah placed on privately owned property. It's not anti-menorah, you'll understand, abutting public thoroughfares from which the menorah can be seen and admired by the public. We would appreciate hearing from you. Zoom out for a second. And all this is in response to a public placement by Israel Bonds of a menorah in City Hall. And it wasn't repeated the year after. Later on, there's concern about, this is already by the late 70s when all of a sudden there are more and more Chabad menorahs, and in the New York Times it's reported that Rabbi Shlomo Riskin, then Stephen Riskin of Lincoln Square Synagogue, has built a gigantic menorah on 76th Street, and there was a court case that was permitted in the late 1970s. Now, it's hard, I think it's historically inaccurate to look at the animus or the attacks on Chabad menorahs specifically through church-state legislation. Chabad had raked the ire of the non-Orthodox for some time. Here is a passage that was uttered at the Central Conference of American Rabbis, the Reform Rabbinical Group, in their annual convention. We know that many Jews have passively accepted their Jewish identification. What are we doing to give them the channels and opportunities and occasions for expressing their Jewish identification other than calling upon them for philanthropy? What are we doing in the Reform Rabbin other than snoring? Why is it? Their words, not mine. Was it that in community after community, the Chabad house captures the imagination not only of our unaffiliated Jews, but of our members? The stalwart, the loyal members of the Reformed congregations are adding their names and are adding to their of their sustenance to the Chabad programs. What is it that they have done to capture the imagination of our communities, if not to speak to the needs of youth, to the needs of loneliness, to the needs of alienation? Somehow we need to grow in our sensitivity and our awareness. This is a rebuke of the Reformed rabbinate that they ought to take a cue from Chabad, our awareness of what is happening in the Jewish community and the needs that are going unmet. They came up with a word for it, a verb, lubavitched. Here in Cincinnati, Hal Walters, do you have to pay to pray? He writes a letter to the editor in the American Israelite. The question was raised in a very timely letter. Well, 2 years ago in the second paragraph, I'm in that column over here, if you can see my cursor, I found myself in the same situation. I couldn't afford to go to high holiday services. The answer to my dilemma came in the form of a Chabad house. They were warm, welcoming, and most of all, understanding of the situation. Their philosophy was very simple. A Jew should not have to pay to pray. Their doors are always open for every Jew, and so are their minds. And so Chabad was really winning the day in the 1970s and 1980s for the less than fully engaged, fully affiliated American Jewish community. Joseph Glazer writes a pretty sober, unaggressive letter, in my estimation. He's the head of one of the bodies of the Reform movement, and he writes a letter to the Lubavitcher Rebbe, asking for him to please ask his lieutenants, his shlichim, to please take down their public menorahs because it placed, in his view, a danger of Jewish flourishing in the United States. If you compromise the integrity of separation of church and state with these menorahs, then all of a sudden you will allow the floodgates to open. This is all the time of Pat Robertson and the moral majority. You will allow those who are trying to make the United States into a Christian country, you will help them succeed. Writes the Lubavitcher Rebbe back to Rabbi Glazer, had I received your letter years ago, this is in the early 1980s, when the practice started, I would have had a more difficult task of defending it for the simple reason that the expected positive results were then a matter of conjecture. But now, after the practice and the results have been observed for a number of years, my task is an easy one, since the general acclaim and beneficial results have far exceeded our expectations. The fact is that countless Jews in all parts of the country have been impressed and inspired by the spirit of Hanukkah, which had been brought to them to many for the first time by seeing these gigantic menorahs in public spaces. Indeed, the eternal and always timely message of Hanukkah, the victory of the outnumbered forces of light over the overwhelming forces of darkness that attempted to make Jews forget God's Torah and mitzvot, struck a responsive chord in the hearts of many Jews and strengthened their sense of identity with the Maccabee of all ages. And he continues on, demurring the Reform leaders' request to desist from these gigantic menorah placements each November and December, Hanukkah time. Probably it wasn't a giant menorah then, it was a little menorah, but here is Rabbi Shem Tov of Philadelphia, who had also extended by then his base of operations to Washington, D.C., lighting menorah with, it was the first time a U.S. president did it, Jimmy Carter, who had, it was the first public appearance after remaining sequestered in the White House as part of the Iran hostage situation that took place in 1979. So if the president's doing it, you have a real big problem if you're trying to get rid of these menorahs. The letter back, Rabbi Glazer to Lubavitcher Rebbe pleads with him, for the sake of democracy and for the sake of Jewish identity and Jewish flourishing in the United States, to think again. Finally, I must disagree with your opinion that there is some intrinsic value to individual Jews involved in the public lighting and blessing of the Chanukiot. I think it might be just the opposite. Ultimately, the survival of Judaism depends on the home, which is where the Chanukiah should be lit. People coming to public places to observe, not really participate in ceremony, are being involved in a kind of public, almost flamboyant religious exercise instead of in a sacred home ritual. From that standpoint also, I think the matter should be reconsidered. It was not. My very best wishes to you. Shalom, Rabbi Joseph B. Glazer. I mentioned that much of the story has to do with the history of American politics. High court rules, cities may put up nativity displays, justice divide 5-4. This is the case in Pawtucket, Rhode Island, of Lynch versus Donnelly, which allowed for a nativity scene, a scene that depicts the birth of Jesus. That, with, you know, one does not have to be a theologian of Christianity to realize there are severe theological implications of Jesus' birth. And so the Supreme Court ruled 5-4 in favor of allowing, in this case in Pawtucket, Rhode Island, the nativity scene to be displayed, a creche, so-called, that's what it's called, nativity scene or a creche, to be displayed in public spaces. Because of that decision of Lynch, Reagan's Supreme Court has already arrived, writes the Washington Post. It's a new era of the courts. Again, I'm not making any current political commentary. I'm just a historian looking at the past. The Kresh case, writes a Jewish letter writer to the Washington Post, I write to express my concern about the rationale of the Supreme Court decision in Lynch versus Donnelly, the constitutionality of placing a creche in a city-sponsored Christmas display. I have no argument with the placement of the creche per se. I put it in the same category as the Christmas carols I sang in school as a child, a sharing of the Christian tradition. However, describing the creche as having legitimate secular, that's important, secular purposes is anathema to me, both as a Jew and as an employee of an organization whose members represent not only the Protestant Roman Catholic communities in the Washington area, but the Jewish and Islamic communities as well. Nothing about Christianity is secular to me. To state in a decision that recalling the birth of Jesus has legitimate secular purposes mocks both my religious beliefs and those of serious Christians. May I now look forward to restaging of a pogrom as a step in reminding Americans of a significant historic religious event? High court busy on their docket were many church-state cases. And in a debate with Pat Robertson, Rabbi Alexander Schindler, the foremost leader of the Reform movement in the 1980s, debates with Robertson and states, this is a gut issue, he writes in the 1980s and 1985, for American Jews. We hold this principle to be our fundamental protection, the separation of church and state, the ultimate ground of that unique freedom which we have experienced in this land, this idea of American exceptionalism being predicated on the separation of church and state. Everywhere else in our wanderings, we suffered persecution, never here. In all other countries, there was an established faith. Here in this blessed America, there is none. That is why we prize the First Amendment as the very cornerstone of our liberties. After Pawtucket, religious symbols on public land, a report sponsored by the American Jewish Congress, places a lot of concern about the implications of allowing a nativity scene to be on public spaces and whether or not the wall, the so-called Jeffersonian wall, is breaking down. This is the year of menorah, which I began talking to you about before. To Lubavitch, the public menorah balances out the public Christmas tree. It's an economic decision. When Mark Stern writes, the head of the American Jewish Congress's legal team, when he debates this or talks about this issue with Chabad leaders, it's not an issue of separation of church and state. It's mathematics. It's arithmetic. To Lubavitch, the public menorah balances out the public Christmas tree. This is after Pawtucket. To the American Jewish Congress, the menorah on public lands clears the path for the creche and the cross. It was still being relitigated in the Supreme Court. Were creches and crosses increasingly to become part of our landscape on public lands, on courthouse and public school lawns, and in city hall courtyards, America's Jews would once again begin to feel that they are a tolerated, just tolerated, minority. To Lubavitch, perhaps, do not aspire to any other status. Most American Jews, however, feel otherwise. Religious liberty, it has said, asserts the equality of all. Then matters of religion, all men are equal before the law. Toleration assumes that all are not equal and that one form of religion has a better right. American Jews are committed not to toleration, but to religious liberty. Writing in reference to the Lynch case, the nativity scene in Pawtucket, for the members of the Lubavitch movement, of course, it is sufficient justification that the Rebbe, that's what I read before, has commanded the erection. So it's impossible, laments Stern, to have a conversation, a reasonable conversation about the legal implications of these Hanukkah menorahs, that are these giant ones that are going up every winter season. the Philadelphia regional group of the American Jewish Congress, as they did many years in 1984, writes a letter to Rabbi Shem Tov, whose disciples established the smaller menorah right across from the Liberty Bell in 1974, and who lit the Hanukkah candelabra with Jimmy Carter in 1979, ask in more aggressive terms, we are writing in anticipation of the Lubavitcher Center's plans to once again erect the Chanukiah in Independence Hall. During Hanukkah, we strongly urge you this year to seriously consider placing the Chanukiah on the grounds of Congregation Mikvah Israel, the oldest congregation in Philadelphia, rather than on publicly owned property as in past years. And specifically in light of Lynch versus Donnelly. When Mayor Ed Koch of New York in 1985 invites a prominent leader, David Gordas, of the American Jewish Committee to a Hanukkah lighting ceremony in his chambers in City Council in New York, he responds, sorry, in his estimation, Jews don't do this. And in St. Louis, the head of the Jewish Community Relation Council reports the JCRC strategy, this is in 1985 also, it read on the heels of Lynch versus Donnelly, has clearly borne fruit in its second year. But there is by no means unanimous feeling within the Jewish community or among the rabbis that the public display of the menorah is inappropriate. To some degree, the menorah at the county government center is a symbol of the division in the St. Louis community between the Orthodox, very strong Lubavitch Orthodox community, and the non-Orthodox. And it is true, though this was a Chabad issue, certainly the modern Orthodox in the yeshiva world, these other Orthodox sub-communities were very reticent about coming out in opposition of Chabad. Now here's something interesting. The Williamsburg Charter Survey on Religion and Public Life. This is a survey of church-state separation and religious sensibilities in the United States, if you will, in the late 1980s. And in one of the survey's questions, about the agreeability of the following statement. Is it okay for city government to display Jewish candles, meaning gigantic Chabad menorahs? If you take a look in how the cross tabbing was, how it played out, there really is no material difference in opinion. Many, many agree, about 80% agree. So the tide is moving in the Chabad's favor. About 75% to 80%, doesn't matter if you're a man, if you're a woman, doesn't matter really what age group you are, 18 or 30 or 60, it's all hovering in that above 75% group. Education, doesn't matter if you have didn't graduate high school, if you're a college graduate. There's only really one indicator of difference in opinion. Doesn't matter where you are in terms of your region, if you're from New York or Boston, if you're in the southern area of the United States, the Midwest and West, it's all the same. There's only one difference, leadership group. If you're in business, again, government, you're a little less favorable. That kind of makes sense, I suppose, intuitively. If you're an academic, you're very opposed to it. Fine. But take a look. Priests and ministers, 80 and 89% respectively, or ministers and priests, rather, support Chabad menorahs. Rabbis, on the other hand, only 16%. The rabbinic leadership of the United States is terribly nervous about the implications of Chabad menorahs in the late 1980s. Even in the Orthodox community, he eventually becomes a judge, Noach Dier, for shame, the self-appointed, in the last paragraph in this editorial in the pages of the Jewish press, the self-appointed protectors of the Jewish community don't speak for me. So railing against the American Jewish Congress, American Jewish Committee, the ADL, their constitutional theories and efforts over the years have crippled the financial situation of Jewish education, the essence of Jewish survival, and now they seek to undermine the symbol of Jewish survival for shame. Meanwhile, a Baruch Cohen from Los Angeles writes to the Jewish press exactly the opposite. I was disturbed to learn that Chabad equates menorahs to Goyisha Christmas trees in the last paragraph in the first column, which is a non-religious symbol. But that didn't stop. Lack of consensus here is Minneapolis, Portland, Oregon, Seattle, Washington, Hartford, Connecticut, Birmingham, Alabama, Worcester, Massachusetts, Maplewood, New Jersey, Morristown, New Jersey, Austin, Texas, New York, Philadelphia, Washington, D.C. It is becoming a Chabad world during the wintertime Hanukkah holiday. And so the case is taken up by the ACLU in Allegheny County to oppose the establishment of a gigantic club by menorah in Pittsburgh. The two depositions that I want to share with you. I want to make sure we have enough time. Doing okay on time. I want to make sure we have time for questions. I see the chat box is filled. Hopefully, I'm doing this as a historian. One affidavit is from Mark Stateman, a reform leader in Pittsburgh. If you look at the deposition, he writes, this is number 4, the Chanukah menorah is a symbol of the religious holiday of Chanukah. Seems sensible. Judaism considers the lighting of the Chanukah menorah to be a religious act. Make a bracha. The Chanukah menorah is viewed by most people as the sole tangible symbol of the holiday of Chanukah. That makes sense. You know, with notwithstanding latkes and dreidels, gift giving, menorahs take center stage. Most people, including many Jews, would regard the Chanukah menorah as a religious symbol, and indeed, it is generally regarded as a religious symbol. Take a look at the Chabad rabbi, Rabbi Yisrael Rosenfeld. He writes, this is on the second column. I know it's a little bit light, a little bit small, but I'll read it to you. It is incorrect, as alleged by plaintiffs, that's ACLU, to constitute the menorah as a purely religious symbol. Furthermore, it is incorrect, reading a little bit further down, as alleged by plaintiffs, to construe the menorah as a purely sectarian object. Based upon my knowledge, understanding of Jewish law, I conclude that these claims of plaintiffs are not true. There is a secular component, argues the Chabad rabbi, to the menorah. I am familiar with the laws and procedures of lighting Chanukah menorahs. All the laws and procedures in Jewish law regarding the Chanukah menorah pertain solely to an individual's own Chanukah lighting done in the privacy of his own homes. Okay, so apparently it's different in a public space. Jewish law prescribes no requirement, commandment, rite, or ritual pertaining to the lighting of a Chanukah menorah in a public place. All right, it is not considered sinful or improper or a ritual omission to fail to light a Chanukah menorah in a public space. The case was taken up by the Supreme Court in the late 1980s, along with relitigating, or redeciding rather, the creche versus the, and as well as the Christmas tree in government and public spaces. But that didn't bother Nat Lewin, the lawyer, Chabad's lead attorney on the Pittsburgh menorah case itself. This is from very fine book, Sue Fishkoff's The Rebbe's Army, a self-described Orthodox Jew who says he has tried to facilitate and encourage religious observance by fellow Jews in the United States. Lewin, who parenthetically is probably, it's not an understatement to say that he is the legal expert in deciding Jewish relevant cases before the Supreme Court. Hopefully one day his archives will be digitized and available. They must be incredible. Says that he never claimed the menorah should be understood as a secular symbol, despite what the justices later wrote in their opinions. His argument focused on context. He handed the court a photograph of the 18-foot menorah as it stood next to the city's 45-foot Christmas tree and told them that such a display did not violate the First Amendment's Establishment Clause, which was meant to protect against government imposition of a particular religion, because, he said, you could hardly say this was propagating Judaism when it was a relatively small menorah in contrast to the Christmas tree. Clearly, no one was trying to impose Judaism on the citizens of Pittsburgh. The court agreed, and Chabad won the case. But as Pittsburgh's Chabad rabbi was getting ready for Chanukah that year, newly elected mayor, Sophie Maslow, the city's first Jewish mayor, took office. She announced that if the Supreme Court says no crash, then she says no menorah either. Fair is fair. In fact, the decision by the Supreme Court was that the nativity scenes were prohibited now, a reversal of Lynch versus Donnelly, but allowed for Christmas trees as a wintertime secular symbol, as well as the Jewish equivalent in this court's estimation of the menorah. Lewin, the matter was never tried again in the Supreme Court, but that didn't stop the debate from raging forward. Nat Lewin, the fact that menorah displays engender emotion or pride and confidence among Jews who see them. Jewish children feel like outsiders when in December of every year they are surrounded by the ever-present symbols of the Christian holiday. If a menorah shines amid the evergreens, wreaths, reindeer, and holly, a Jewish child or adult can identify with it and sense the hospitality and generosity that have been a part of this nation's tradition. Banishing menorahs from public places means derogating religion. Should be denigrating religion and denying the Jews the equal access to public forums that are available to a secular organization, gospel groups, and evangelical meetings. Today's constitutional issue being litigated across the country is whether cities must allow private menorahs. So not are they allowed, but do they have to? Do the municipalities have to allow them? Alan Nadler, and we'll conclude with this, the kindling of huge menorahs in public places in response to Nat Lewin. Alan Nadler, a prominent scholar at the time in Jewish studies in public places across America, opens a dangerously constitutional can of worms. It can very easily backfire on the Jewish community by undermining the principle of freedom from established religion, which has always been such a blessing, rearticulating that view of the American Jewish Congress and others for American Jewry. Going down, referring to Jefferson, to keep that wall intact, we should keep menorah lighting ceremonies out of the State House, out of City Hall, and out of Central Park. So even Supreme Court could not end the debate. And it's not one that I'm here to litigate or to decide. It's a really interesting question about what augurs the success of the American Jewish community. Do we leverage the sentiment of our Christian neighbors and to use our wintertime holiday to increase Jewish identity and to use the church as a tool to do that? Or does it somehow undermine what many, and I'll say historians too, but certainly thought leaders in the American Jewish communities presume, that America is different because of that separation of church and state? It's an interesting debate, and it's one certainly that's not going to end here anytime soon. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Zev, always. Okay. Like I mentioned, Dr. Zev will be starting, please go out, a 10-part series the beginning of January, Adventures in American Judaism. So this is just a taste. And if anybody has a question, we'll give you 97 seconds to ask any questions. Vakasha. And Zev, you want to take a quick look in the chat box?
Sure, yes. So at one point, Nancy wrote, yes, CRC is Jewish Community Relations Council. Thank you. I slipped in my mind at that moment. Yeah. Looking at, I didn't look at these questions beforehand, so I don't want to...
Go. Just read through the questions. If wants to speak, they will.
I wanted to ask you whether you had an opinion about the straight versus the curved menorah branches, whether these are echoed in the...
Oh, so that's really interesting, because, of course, one looks at the symbol of the State of Israel and the Arch of Titus, you see the curved one. Maimonides, Rambam, has a picture in the Mishnah Torah of the straight edge. And Chabad is very beholden to Rambam's interpretation of images and text. And so they use that. What's interesting is a number of scholars have written about this, about the icons of American Judaism, that the proliferation of these giant menorahs being a Maimonidean style menorah has somehow changed Jewish and non-Jewish assumptions about the size and shape, certainly the size, but the shape of the menorah as well.
Does straight versus curved correspond?
So I don't have a particular opinion halachically, if you're asking me about that. But what's interesting is that Chabad, since they draw from Rambam's straight, the angular presentation of the menorah, that is the style of menorah. And so when all those pictures they showed you, those those weren't actually photographs. I made them look like photographs of all the different menorahs around the United States, and it exists in Canada as well, in Israel. It's interesting how people's the mind's eye and the interpretation of what a menorah ought to look like has changed to some extent as well. So that's certainly the case.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, okay. That's a good question.
Janine, you have a 4-second question?
Yes. In view of the proliferation now of symbols everywhere, including classrooms, how do you feel about the fact that people are stepping forward, calling themselves Satanists, and asking for the equal right to display in public places?
I will appeal that I took a few courses, but I'm no political scientist.
You'll take the fifth. The Fifth Amendment.
There you go. And good.
Canada.
In the history of law.
That was the First Amendment. He's only talking about the First Amendment, not the Fifth Amendment. Okay. All right. Thank you, Zev.
It was a pleasure.
Right. Okay.
Chag
Thank you.